The Morning Struggle podcast is brought to you by Blue Clover Therapy, a mental health counseling practice in Salt Lake City, Utah. Visit www.blueclovertherapy.com for more information. Blue Clover Therapy, because your mental health deserves a specialist.
Activate.
Welcome to the Morning Struggle podcast, where we take habits of successful people and break them down one at a time into history, science, and action plan so you can implement them into your life and build a better you. Stay tuned. All right, what episode is this? I don't even know where we're at anymore.
So this is More Than Money Retirement. So it's actually the fourth one of a block.
So we're doing like mini series, mm-hmm. blocks of episodes, and we're talking about more than money. Mm-hmm. So how to live with money, how to live without money, how to have a better relationship with money.
Yes.
Not necessarily how to get a bunch of money and have big yachts.
No, we do not go over yachts in this block.
This isn't the yacht episode. The yacht episode is coming up.
Yeah, it'll be later on.
All right, sounds good. But we're talking about retirement.
Yes.
And before we even do that, good morning, everyone.
Good morning, guys.
Welcome to the Morning Struggle Podcast. I'm Ty.
I'm Jesse.
And we bring you habits of successful people. And we are in this new phase of binging blocks. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about retirement.
Yes.
Are we just ready to retire? Retire early? All the above? What are we doing?
All the above. Well, because really, if you think about it, with money, a lot of times our end goal is to retire. So the idea is that we've gone through these three other blocks. We've talked about money and our relationship with money. And now we're getting to kind of this end goal that we're at. And we want you to be successful in retirement.
Yeah, because what do you do in life? You are born. You grow up awkwardly, you get a job, you work your job for 40 years, they give you a gold watch, and then you go sit in your retirement home.
Yeah.
Life over, life great.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of, yeah.
So, but retirement, really, a lot of people have trouble retiring, even though that's something most of us aspire to do.
Yeah, well, because we think of retirement as the lack of working. It is way more complicated than that. So that's why we're going over this, is so that you guys can be, you can be unsuccessful at retirement.
You can be very unsuccessful at retirement. Not just financially, but more importantly, mentally.
Right. Okay. Yes, exactly.
All right. So we're going to get into retirement. We're going to do the history of retirement, mm-hmm. the science of retirement, and then we're going to action plan it. So when you're ready to step over that line of not working anymore, mm-hmm. you too can have big parties on big yachts.
Yes, the yachts.
All right, here we go.
This day in history.
Before we can talk about the history of retirement,
yeah.
which I'm super excited about this, retirement's a fairly new thing. In the 1800s, it was a German chancellor, Bismarck, who came up with like the first state pension.
Oh.
I think it was the great-great-grandfather Bismarcky, the famous rapper. But I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that one.
He's a famous rapper.
But I'm pretty sure. Anyway, so that's a fairly new phenomenon. Like retirement and pensions and taking care of the elderly is fairly new. And my thinking was, hey, back in the day, people lived until they were 35.
You always
hear that. They lived till they're 35. Wait a minute.
What?
Not so much. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
So people, there's the difference between life expectancy and lifespan.
Oh.
Life expectancy is the average of what people live. Well, infant mortality rate back in the Greek and Roman and Egyptian time was somewhere like 30%, maybe as high as 50%.
Oh, wow.
So if a baby dies at age one, mm-hmm. and someone else lives to 70, the life expectancy is 35 years old.
Right.
So, but not everybody dies at 35 years old. Yes, a lot of babies die, a lot of kids die. And if you make it out of adolescence, you were a champion of the times because you were part of the half that made it kind of deal.
Oh, geez.
So, and they have a lot of documentation on this. So in the 7th century BC, the Greek poet Hesiod, I'm butchered his name, but that's okay, said, a man should marry when you are not much less than 30, not much more. So if you're till 30, you ain't dying at 35 because then your kids are 5 years old and they're fatherless and motherless.
They're totally fine surviving on their own at five.
Yep. Emperor, and this was back in those days, those Greek days, you couldn't even run for office until you were 30.
Oh.
And then Augustus lowered it to 25 because he wanted some young blood in there. But Augustus lived till he was 70 years old. So, and you couldn't run for the high council in Greece until you were 43. You only have to be 35 to run for president here in the United States. So in century one, There was a book, Pliny, devoted an entire chapter of his natural history to people who lived the longest.
Okay.
Among them, he listed Consul M. Valerius Corvinus, 100 years old. Cicero's wife, 103 years old.
Wait, Cicero's wife? Why isn't her name on there?
Cicero's wife, Terentia.
Oh, okay, because, like, girlfriend's got a name.
Yeah, Tarantula. Cicero's wife, Miss Tarantula. So, Age of Empires. So, back in 1994, a study looked at every man entered in the Oxford Classical Dictionary who lived in ancient Greece and Romans, and their ages of death were compared to men listed in, like, the more recent chambers of the thing.
Okay.
And of the 397 ancient totals, 99 died violently by murder, suicide, or battle.
Whoa.
So people were just dying all the time. With that, though, most of them lived to a medium age of 72 years.
Oh, why would a 72-year-old go into battle,
though? This was Roman times.
Yeah, but why would you go into battle?
No. Those are young men dying in their 20s and teens because they go to battle.
Oh, gotcha.
And that's why life expectancy was like 35.
Oh, that makes sense.
But
okay.
People were old all over the place. They had old geezers all over ancient Rome.
Oh.
That median age went down to 66 after 100 BC because they started using lead pipes in their aqueducts. Oh,
that'll do it.
Probably not the best. All right. So now that we got that out of the way, we know that people back in the day actually lived quite a long time. Probably about the same amount of time as we live today, which is insane considering all the medical stuff. We just don't have people die early. So here we go.
Oh, so we have less like child and infant mortality.
We have less child infant mortality and less gruesome battle death.
Oh, in your 20s.
In your 20s. It's just the way it is now. So more people are living to that older age. Mm. It's not that we live longer, I guess. But in 1889, German Chancellor Otto von Bismarck, a.k.a. the Bismarcky, introduced modern pensions.
Oh.
So he decided that people over whatever it was, I can't remember, whatever, 65 years old, would be taken care of. Germany held on to this. Germany is in some trouble because there's so many old people on pensions in Germany. They have some financial issues. But this was not a new idea.
Wait a minute. So the United States doesn't have pensions very often anymore?
Oh, yeah, no. We're getting rid of pensions.
Why?
Because we're putting it on onus on the actual person to save for their own retirement.
That's not taking care of your peeps.
And we'll get into that a little bit. Okay, but I'll be quick here so I don't bore everybody. This wasn't a new idea, though. So Mr. Chancellor Bismarck, he kind of took this idea from past stuff.
Yeah.
But pensions were very, very specific back in the day. In 13 BC, Roman Emperor Augustus, again, the Augustor, who lowered the age of his to 25, lived to 70. He began paying pensions to Roman legionnaires who served 20 years. So it's like the first military pension.
Oh, nice.
You come fight for Rome, we'll take care of you with some grapes and some gold when you're old.
Nice.
And then the troops' pensions were financed first by regular taxes, then by a 5% inheritance tax.
Oh.
So they, like you said, taxes, you tax and then you give it to other people. People don't like you taking their money away from them and giving it to other people. Thomas Paine, during the Revolutionary War, he wrote an essay called Common Sense, and it called for a 10% inheritance tax. And then that tax would be used to pay benefits to everyone age 50 and older to guard against poverty in old age. So this was like American times. Or our history. And America and our founding fathers and people said, that is a great essay. We're going to shelve it, though, because we don't want to pay 10%. We don't even want to pay England. We're going to pay 10% inheritance tax.
That's ridiculous.
So nothing happened there. Civil War, though, the government did start, the Union and the Confederacy started paying pensions to disabled warriors or warriors, soldiers.
Warriors.
They were warriors.
They were warriors.
Civil War warriors and widows of people who died.
Oh.
So it was kind of like one of our first military pensions started. And then, so in 1880, when half of American works on farms, 78% of American men worked past the age of 65.
Oh, wow.
Because half of Americans farmed, you had to work. There were no pensions. You just worked until you died, or you worked until your son took over the farm and you couldn't work anymore.
And then was it kind of on your kids then to take care of you after that point?
Yeah, kind of. That's multi-generational homes and things like that.
Yeah.
But then we started having the Industrial Revolution.
Oh.
We started having factory work. And
that'll kill you quick.
One of the founders of Johns Hopkins Hospital, William Osler, in 1905, decried the uselessness of men older than 60 and said they should leave the workforce.
Wow.
Yep. So in 1875, American Express offered America's first private pension plan.
Oh.
So they were the very first off of that. World War II, we get some military pensions, Social Security Act in 1935, and then we didn't add Medicare to our plan, Social Security plan, until 1965.
What? Yeah. Really?
So pretty much before these times, these 1935 and then 1965 for healthcare.
Yeah.
You essentially worked until you died. And if you didn't die in a bloody, gruesome battle, you lived a long time. We had a lot of impoverished old people. And that's probably why we had multi-generational homes.
Right.
Not only was housing really, really hard to come by back in the day, we did an episode on that.
Yeah.
Like,
you
think housing's hard now? If you were trying to buy a house in 1905, forget about it.
Yeah.
Like, you moved in with your great-grandparents, and you were happy to have a bed.
Right.
And it was on the floor, and it was made of straw.
Yes. You know?
But yeah, so this is a fairly new phenomenon, these retirements. So, and back in the day, you lived just as long. So, be thankful for your little measly Social Security check. That's all I got to say.
Oh, that's super interesting.
Yep. But then we didn't go, like, in the 1970s and 80s, they started doing, like, 401ks, and then 90s was IRAs, and then they're all ERISA protected. But then it shifted all the onus from pensions onto individual savings. And that's why people are afraid of Social Security. I'm not really afraid Social Security is going to go away. You know, I just think that it needs to be managed a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, no, that's interesting, though, that it's so recent, though. I thought, like, this was just something we did.
Nope. We once you couldn't work anymore, you said, listen, Popper, you just go to the little water fountain, the little, what's the well? The well, not the well.
The fountain.
The fountain in the town square.
Yeah.
You sit out there and you beg and you collect the change that people throw in there.
And then you yell at the kids.
Yeah.
And
you say, there's that old 100-year-old man, the only one that lived.
That's right.
Past 35.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's all I got. That's all I got for history of retirement.
Uh-huh.
So now we're going to talk about the science of us in modern day going into retirement after we survive birth
and
childhood and war.
Yeah.
You know, like sword war, like war with swords and spears.
Yeah, which is a real rough death.
And then how our brain deals with it, right?
Yes.
All right, here we go.
We should discuss your cream.
We're going to discuss the cream right now. So
okay.
For those of you who have never been in our little recording studio, Jesse makes the coffee in the morning.
I do.
And I get the stuff set up. And I lately have been taking cream in my coffee.
Yeah.
Like heavy cream.
Yeah.
Because I'm a heavy, heavy guy. I'm not. I'm like 130 pounds. I need to gain some weight. This is probably a good thing. But this morning, for some reason, I usually do like a splash of cream and then the rest hot coffee.
It's not splash, typically.
This morning, I think you reversed it. So we had a splash of coffee and then a cup of heavy, heavy cream.
Yeah.
So if I'm kind of talking over my tongue this morning, it's because I've got a nice cream film around my mouth.
But think about it. You won't have to eat anything today.
I won't have to eat anything all week.
Like that's all the calories you need.
This is all the calories a man needs for 7 days. They should do this in the military. They just, you don't even need to feed those guys. Just give them a cup of cream. Oh, and it's good. And
it's lukewarm.
And it's like lukewarm. It's not cold where it's like, but it's not hot with coffee. It's like, it's right in the middle. You're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
There was an anecdote for you.
That was amazing.
All of you now know how I take my coffee. Here, let's get into the science of retirement and talk to us what happens to your brain when we do the transition.
Well, the big thing with retirement is that it is considered delayed gratification, obviously.
Obviously.
Right? And the biggest obstacle with retirement now, especially now because most of us don't have pensions and things, is that we're trying to ease our discomfort.
When we're working, we want to stop the discomfort of working.
All of it,
just
of working,
life.
Of life, of all this kind of stuff.
Raising kids or dealing with neighbors or whatever.
Yeah, so because the big thing is that with retirement now, you have to put away money that you're making now in the thought that you're going to use it later.
Okay.
So, but the thing is that we're like, well, I could use that for a boat. I could use that for a bigger house. And that kind of eases this general discomfort that we have.
Okay.
What we tend to ease discomfort with would be food, drugs and alcohol, gambling and adrenaline dumping, sex, anger, and money spending in general.
All those things sound completely reasonable to spend your money on all the same time.
Yeah. All the same time.
All the same time. Yep.
Ooh, okay. Yep. That's a lot of things all at the same time. The thing is that those have the dopamine dumps that we're seeking, but none of those will carry you into retirement.
Right. That's living for the now, the YOLO stuff. And you get your dopamine dump, but your future self is going to be kind of upset at you for not preparing.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not squirreling away any acorns for the winter.
Exactly. Okay. So that's the thing. So the biggest factor in a successful retirement is increased tolerance of dissatisfaction. So the human condition, the human condition is dissatisfaction.
That's our normal, like our baseline condition is dissatisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's how we progress, actually.
I get it. You're cold. You make fire.
Yep.
And then our caveman and make fire.
I'm hungry. I learned how to farm.
Okay.
Yeah, or hunt or that kind of thing.
So our baseline disposition is discomfort.
Yeah. And so we spend all this time trying to ease our discomfort. The problem with now is that we have a lot of options to and readily available options to ease our discomfort and our dissatisfaction. So the better that you're at kind of accepting your situation and being more tolerant of it, the more successful you'll be in retirement.
Okay, that makes perfect sense.
So what's really interesting though is that retirement increases dementia, depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, and general physical decline.
But doesn't that just bring us more into our discomfort mode? Are we just returning to baseline?
It does, and here's the thing. It does not have anything to do with age. Because you think of retirement, it's 65. And you're like, well, yeah, I'm getting dementia at 65. You know, like you start moving down that path of, like, yeah, I'm not as physically fit. Not so, because if you retire in your 30s.
You're still going to get it?
Yeah, and you're still going to get all of those elements.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, probably not a great thing. Poor mental health is our general vibe.
Yeah.
Right? And then, so we get into retirement. We start getting more... diseased. So our ease goes away.
Oh, our ease, our EASEs.
Yeah, feeling okay because retirement itself actually creates a dopamine dump, right?
Right.
We're excited. We get our gold watch. We leave the firm.
Right.
We get to buy that yacht.
We tell our boss to
stick it.
To stick it, and we go away.
Yeah, we generally, there's a lot of spending at the beginning of retirement because we've spent all this time trying to like squirrel away our nuts for the winter, right?
Right.
And now we get to spend some of those acorns, right?
Right.
It feels weird just getting those nuts in the tree.
Yep. Sure exactly. That's what we do.
That's what we're
very
doing.
Primitive. People are very primitive.
We really are. And so what happens is that once we get that dopamine dump, then we start overspending. And the overspending, we start continuing to have to spend in order to feel okay about what's going on.
Because that dopamine stops.
It wears off.
Or we get used to it?
Both.
Okay.
So let's say you buy the Airstream, because we've talked about this, right? You buy the Airstream and you're going to go and cruise around, but then it's not new anymore.
Right.
Right.
And this is the thing, like we would talk about getting an Airstream and traveling. I don't really like traveling. I don't really like camping. Why do I want an Airstream?
It's the idea of
escaping my current life, which is kind of... a lot of pressure and work.
Yeah, it's trying to ease your discomfort, right?
All right.
Yeah, so we overspend. Then we start to recognize that we have low social interactions.
Okay.
Because you got to think of all the little minute interactions that you're having throughout your day.
You have a ton of interactions at work. Most people, that's where they get the bulk of their social interactions.
But we don't think of those. We think of like, oh, I'm going out to dinner with my friend or I'm, you know, hanging out with my kid.
But that's once a week and then you spend 40 hours with Joe in the cubicle next to you. And you don't like Joe.
No, you don't like him. But you socially interact with him.
But you interact with Joe.
Yep.
And he is your best friend, whether you like it or not.
He's your clump mate.
He's your clump mate.
So you have all these little low social interactions. And then we have low view of self-importance.
Uh-huh.
So your self-esteem goes to pot because... you don't feel important. Nobody cares. Nobody checks on you. No one sees how things are going. Nobody wants your reports anymore.
Right.
So we start to realize that these things are not occurring. So you will, as you go through these elements, you will notice that you're going to go through a lot of emotions because you're going to be excited, but you're also going to feel unimportant, irrelevant. You're going to get excited at times. There's going to be sadness, depression, and there is going to be grief. So grief doesn't actually go away completely.
Oh, keep going. Oh. Sorry.
Grief doesn't go away completely, but it comes in waves. So you're going to experience grief on and off throughout your retirement.
Okay.
Then we start to overspend. And the problem with overspending in retirement is that you have a fixed budget typically at that point.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah. It'd actually be really rare if you didn't.
And, so and there's usually no way to like go earn extra unless you went back into the workforce.
Yes, exactly.
You can't just like work overtime or I'm going to pick up some extra shifts or whatever. You just... You have what you have.
Yeah, but the problem is we start to rationalize it in our brain why we need these new things. So you have your Airstream, but you would make it really cool is if you also had a new truck.
Well, because you need a nice big new truck to pull your Airstream.
Yeah, it'd be better. It'd be nicer. It'd be whatever else. So we start to rationalize that in our brain. So then you start getting really depressed. You start getting really anxious because you've now spent over your budget. You have a limited amount of time. And then we typically, if you did the math, you start to shorten your years that you can be retired.
Okay.
So the idea of like, okay, I have 20 years that I can be retired. Now I bought the truck and the Airstream and the boat, and now I only have 15 years that I can be retired.
Gotcha.
Right? And so it, and then that starts playing on our physical health because then...
Because just stress and cortisol, chronic high levels of cortisol, right?
And you get a big dip in physical decline.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Because you're like always inflamed and you're...
Yeah, you're very, very stressed out.
All right, makes sense.
So 2 to 3 years it takes to kind of get into retirement mode. And we've watched this happen where it takes a couple years before you start feeling comfortable being retired.
Right.
And then it takes 6 years before you will realize, be able to like properly assess if retirement is healthy for you.
Oh my gosh, by then it's too late. You can't go back. There's no backsies. There's no backsies in retirement.
Because you can't, 6 years out of the workforce, that would actually be pretty rough.
It would be hard to go back to what you had after 6 years.
Yes.
Is there a way to dip your toe in the water? Is that part of the action plan?
Well, kind of.
I'm going to come up with an action plan today. It's going to be dipping your toe in retirement.
Dipping the toe, just right. Kind of retirement.
Yeah.
So, but the biggest piece that I want to stress with retirement, because you worry about finances and making sure you have a fixed or you have a budget and you have all these different things, right? But the biggest concern with retirement and being successful is actually the mental health. And so what we want to do, and this will go into the action plan a little bit, where we want to plan when we're going to retire, where we're going to retire, how we're going to retire, and what we're going to do.
Who, what, when, where, why? Did I say that right?
When, where, how, and what.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Now I got to remember a different acronym.
I know, I'm so sorry.
All the W's. HWs. Okay.
So because it really is a lifestyle. This should be considered another stage of life and that you're going to move into the next. Like people, so when you're, let's say, childbearing years, right? Let's say you decide to have kids, you want to have kids. You're with your partner and that lifestyle is completely different than kid lifestyle. Before you have kids and hopefully you thought about what lifestyle is going to, how your life is going to change into the next stage of having children. Cause it is very different. I remember sleeping. That was cool.
That was a neat phase.
Yeah. So we have to recognize that this is a new stage and what we're getting ourselves into by retiring.
Okay. And then we're going to go into that with the actual plan.
We are. Yes. Okay. Yep.
Anything else on our brain?
That is all on the brain. Yep.
So we're just going to be uncomfortable. We're going to have discomfort,
yes.
Unease. And that's our disposition. So deal with it and just expect
We're going to action plan it so that, because you will have it. So we want to properly assess that level. And people have varying levels. Like so, I'm going to retire really well. You're not going to retire well at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's
I'm
going to
be on my yacht. I'm going to be on my yacht dancing. I'll probably be mopping the deck. Because that's all I can do is work on it to get on one of those bad boys.
And having a cup of cream.
Yep. By then, it's going to be all cream. No splash of coffee. All cream. Okay, so that's what we got for the science of retirement. Let's go and do a quick coffee segment, and then we'll go in and we'll do an action plan so you can plan out the mental health of your retirement so you can do it successfully.
Yes.
I drank pots and pots and pots and pots of strong black coffee trying to keep my sleepy soul awake. But the sleepiness still comes along, and when it does, it's fast and strong. I end up with a bad case of the shakes.
In our coffee segment today, in the theme of my morning brew that I got this morning, we're going to talk about an article from, I don't know, arabiacoffee.com.
All right.
They're a prize journal, publishing journal, mm-hmm. on coffee, all things coffee. Mm-hmm. You can buy coffee and tea there if you would like.
Oh, look at that.
They didn't sponsor this podcast.
No.
But anyway, when milk met coffee.
What does that mean?
It's like, when did we start putting milk in coffee?
Oh, when?
When did we start putting heavy cream
in
coffee?
When? I'm like, what kind of milk is
so
when?
So we've gone over the origins of coffee, you know, like the goat herders and that whole apocryphal story, you know, and then it moves from like that Mesopotamia kind of area, the Ethiopia area.
They're feeding their goats.
Up into Europe. So apparently in the 17th century, when coffee made its way into Europe, or after coffee made its way into Europe, it was touted as like a health cure. So it was...
Milk was... Coffee was. What'd you just say?
Coffee was.
Because it's amazing.
Yeah. So coffee used to be brewed Turkish style, which is super heavy, like very coffee bittery, like rich coffee. Mm. So it made its way to Europe. They started opening up coffee shops in the 17th century, and it was like coffee was a medical wonder to aid in digestion and productivity, but it was very bitter for the sensitive palates of the Europeans. Mm-hmm. So these coffee shops started putting milk and cream into the coffee to make it more palatable for our Western taste buds.
Oh, look at us go.
And then we did the next best thing here in America. In 2022, we decided to just go all cream and eliminate the coffee.
Stop!
So all cream, eliminate the coffee. So
okay, then I need to figure out a way to measure it. Because I got crazy this morning.
You did. That's all I got for coffee segment. There's really no... I wish there was like a story of like someone spilling, you know, their jar of goat milk into the coffee pot. And then they tried it. And it was this big, you know, epiphany moment. And next thing you know, cream milk. And sugar. And that was, you know, Sir Senior Starbucks, you know, of Spain or something like that. It wasn't like that.
People started saying
like, this is supposed to be healthy for us. Let's fix the taste of it.
Well, and we did a segment a while back where it was talking about that people are reducing the amount of milk that they put in their coffee. Like you're having a separation of people who put milk in their coffee versus not.
Yeah, you got the sugar crew, and then you got the black coffee crew.
Right, and it's interesting because now in America we have better roasting, I guess. So coffee is less bitter, so you don't need to have that in order to make it palatable.
Right, because it's so precise. Roasting coffee beans is so precise.
Yeah. I wanted to roast.
The fractions of seconds to mess it up. Yeah, you wanted to roast coffee beans.
It's a process.
Yeah, it's not going to work. So anyway, if you wanted to know when we started putting in milk in our... It was in Europe in the 17th century, and they were eating their croissants.
Croissants.
And talking about democracy, and then drinking their coffee and saying, this is terrible. We got to fix this Turkish coffee.
Yeah.
And then they put some milk and then cream in it. Next thing you know, they're blending it up in a milkshake.
Yep. With a whole bunch of caramel.
Yep. That's all I got for a coffee segment.
Nice.
All right. It's nice, short, sweet. But let's get back in retirement. Let's talk about action plan how we can make retirement successful.
Let's hope you make the most of it, my boy.
All right, so we're not talking about financial retirement. We're not talking about stability and 401ks and IRAs and pensions and how to have enough money in retirement.
Yes.
So you're on your own for that.
Here's the thing. You absolutely need to look into that.
That's a big part of it. Don't look into it here.
No.
We don't know. We spend all our money every day. Like
way too much money.
I spend it by 3 p.m, and that's why my kids don't eat dinner most nights.
Stop.
Because we don't have money by 5.
No, because here's the thing. You do need to look at your finances. I would get a financial advisor, because then they can plan that stuff out. You love that stuff.
I do.
Yeah,
I do.
So much. But
financial advisors, a certified fiduciary. I'm not a financial advisor.
Yeah.
But if you do go out and find one, make sure that they are a fiduciary. Ask them. Say, are you a fiduciary? Because then they can't sell you like insurance products that can make them a bunch of money.
Yeah.
They have to have your best interest in mind.
Right.
Legally.
Yeah. So you have to have an idea of what this is going to look like financially, because everybody's retirement is going to be a little different.
Okay.
But the big piece of that, and this is why I want you to talk to a financial advisor, is that I want you to know what kind of retirement you're looking to have.
So are you looking to be dancing on yachts? Or are you looking to be working in the basement of a cruise ship?
Yeah.
Like,
wow, those are very different things.
But they're on big boats.
Yeah, they're on big boats. So it's pretty much the same thing.
But you got to know how much you're going to spend.
Yeah, and just a rough idea. You won't know exactly. There's always, it's nice to have a buffer, but you should have a kind of rough idea of what you want to be doing in retirement.
Okay.
And realistically, what it's going to look like. Do you have kids? Do you not have kids? Are you going to have grandkids in that time frame? That kind of stuff. Because then you kind of know, are you going to own your house? Are you still renting? Like, lots of factors there. So sit down with a financial advisor, because you have to know that part.
Make sure you count your acorns. You got to know your acorns. But yep. Now you're going to tell us how to be happy with those acorns.
Yes.
Okay,
so
here we go.
The first thing, I want you to structure your days and keep a routine. Now, it doesn't have to be what you're doing currently, but it has to be a routine that you do.
Because for 60 years, 65 years, 35 years, whenever you retire, every single day, essentially, except for maybe some Sundays, has been structured. Where you have a time you get up, you have a time you go to work, you have a time you eat lunch, you have, you know, your activities after work, you have your kids' activities or practices.
Yeah.
Everything is very structured. And then all of a sudden to go to a non-structured is mind-blowing for us, apparently?
Yeah, it is really bad for our mental health. And this is where we get cognitive and physical decline. Because I remember my grandfather would wake up at 5 o'clock every morning, and I thought he was nuts. Because, like, if I could sleep in, I would absolutely sleep in.
Right.
But that kept structure for him, and therefore that gives us purpose. It makes us feel like we've done stuff throughout the day.
Okay.
So it's very important.
So structure.
I want you to set goals for yourself in retirement.
So, what kind of goals? Any goals?
Any goals. It can be, I want to scuba in these oceans. I want to, I don't know,
I
want
to walk a mile every day.
Yeah.
Something.
Well, you and I came up with very different. I was like, run a marathon and walk a mile.
Walk a mile.
See?
But like
different goals.
Every
different
day.
Goals.
That's 365 miles at the end of the year.
Oh, well, a marathon.
A marathon is 26 miles.
Yeah. And then your body starts breaking down.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. Yeah. But setting some sort of goals, things that you want to achieve specifically in retirement.
Okay.
So it should have something to do with the interests that you currently have, but maybe you don't have enough time for right now. And then how to move into them into retirement.
Okay.
I need you to continue to socialize. So, I don't care how you do this. Maybe it's talking to your barista, maybe it's going to the grocery store, but we need to recognize that these little micro socializations that we have are really important.
So like maybe volunteer or go to the sock hop at the social
sock hop?
Yeah, at the rec center or whatever.
Oh,
when they have
those
kind of things. Or maybe get a part-time job and not do it for the money.
Yeah.
Maybe you're a multimillionaire, but you don't even have to go talk to your barista. You can go be a barista.
Yeah, and you can learn how to make really good coffee and not over cream.
You got to give yourself social obligations, right?
Yeah, and that's actually my next point, is to have a fun job or a volunteer job or something, basically to get those socializations back.
Okay.
So it might be that maybe you watch or nanny your grandkids. Maybe that's your socialization or that kind of thing. But we need to recognize that socialization is really important, especially those little micro ones. And so setting up how you're going to do that.
So when we all envision retiring and sitting on a beach sipping, you know, regular full alcohol strength or virgin margaritas, depends on your flavor, that's not good for us. And we definitely won't be happy. So we got to say, hey, I'm going to do that, but I'm almost going to do that like a vacation from my volunteering job, you know, down at the kids club.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Like I have now come up with this nonprofit organization,
right?
But then I get to go on vacation. So we get to we have to gauge how this is going to go.
So retirement's pretty much just your typical life of working, just a little less frequent, a little less pressure, and a little more of what I actually want to do.
Yes, it's the next stage of life.
So you're telling me we work until we die.
Yep.
So it's no different.
It
we might
no
as well
different.
Be living in ancient Roman times, drinking out of lead pipes. this is what I'm talking about.
Oh my gosh, our retirement would be shorter if we had lead pipes.
Oh, okay. But
but really though, it's a lifestyle.
My idea of like, I'm going to save as much money as I can so I can go escape all this pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be happy. So I've got to change my mindset into, I'm going to work until I die. But maybe when I go to retire, I only have to work one day a week, or I get to do the job that I really, really want to do.
Yeah.
You know, or I do a job that actually doesn't pay me any money because I don't need money at that point.
But it's enriching.
I want to be an artist, and I want to go to art classes, and I want to put on art. What do you call it when they go and buy
symposiums?
Your art? Not a symposium. That'd be when you teach it.
Oh.
Whatever. A show. Anyway. Art
show.
An art. Yep. It's not it. But anyway. So you open your gallery or whatever. But but you do something that doesn't really make you money or is way off in left field, but it is still technically working, quotation marks.
Yes.
Work till you die. Okay.
Work till you die. Yep, exactly. And so we're keeping this idea of 2 to 3 years. You're going to know, kind of get into the swing of things. 6 years, you'll know if it's healthy for you. And I do want you to think of this as a lifestyle and a mindset.
Okay. So still need structure. Still need goals.
Yep.
Work until you die. Realize it's going to take time. and realize that your baseline is discomfort. Yeah. So when you are uncomfortable with your world, know that that is what is genetically predisposed in your brain.
It's a human
for
disposition.
Hundreds of thousands or millions of years, however long you think that human long beings were alive.
Yep.
So that's it.
Yeah.
This was a bummer.
This was kind of a depression. I'm sorry.
This wasn't like a, hey, here's a successful habit so you can go sip martinis on your yacht.
I think it's still exciting because, like, you're going to go do something that you love. You just need to plan it out accordingly and be mentally healthy while you do it.
So I'm just not going to retire from my current job.
Pretty much, you're telling me. Yeah.
I'm just going to work until I die.
I need you to make a lot of money so I can keep giving you cream.
I know cream's expensive now with all the inflation stuff going on. So, all right. But in all actuality, it makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Like, if you want a successful transition into retirement, a lot of people who you see in retirement who are the happiest mm-hmm. are either ones that like own their own company and then they never retire. They just mm-hmm. always work in their company, or they're volunteering all the time. You never really see those people who are like, oh yeah, we go on vacation to Cabo, you know, and then do nothing else.
Yeah.
Those are not the happy ones in retirement.
Exactly.
So if you really want to be successful in retirement, you got to do this, which is just more work. So maybe you'll finally get a relax when you die. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, kind of actually.
But then you live a pretty good life.
It's an enriching life.
And maybe they write a book about you.
Yeah, you could get a book made about you.
You could get a book made about you. Mm-hmm. All right. Just like Augustus from ancient Greece. So, all right, you got anything else for us?
That's it.
That's our action plan. We kind of just petered off
we
at the end.
We just kept
there.
Going.
This is like retirement. We weren't ready to end it.
We just kind of discomfortly
went off into the distance. So
yeah.
thank you for joining us.
You guys are wonderful.
These. So get your habits going. Know that you're going to fail at a bunch of them. We have failed at a ton of them. We even took a whole long period off. I know mm-hmm. Jesse said, don't talk about the time we took off. We did none of our stuff.
None of
them. Except maybe waking up early. But everything
else, we
were bad for a while. So
yeah.
We're getting our butts back into gear.
Yeah, we are.
We're going to start implementing these successful habits again. And that way, when we get to that retirement transition, we will do it the best we can and the most comfortable that the world will allow us.
Yes.
All right. So that's it. That's all I got.
Yep.
All right. We'll go out there and
build a better you.
Thanks, guys.